Lamed Aleph, we're up to the sixth line. So the Gemara says, Ba'amine Rabbi Avina Meir of Sheshes, Ba'asani Zonas Mina Achin, Maise Yodeh Lemi, Bimkom Av Kaime, Mahasa Maise Yodeh Lav, Hachanami Maise Yodeh Lachin, Odilma Lodami Lav, Hasa Midi De Mitzina, Hachalav Midi Du Mitzina. So the Gemara has the following question. The Gemara says, let's say you have a daughter who's being supported by the brothers because her father died. So the brothers inherited the father's estate and now they're obligated to support their sister. So the question is, does the sister have to now give her maisei yodeh, her earnings, her wages, to the brother? So the Gemara raises the following question. On the one hand, you can argue that the brothers take the place of the father. Just as when the father's alive, any wages that the girl earns goes to the father in exchange for him supporting her. So perhaps the same should be true here by the brothers, or maybe no. Maybe you can argue that in the former case, the father is supporting the girl from his own estate. The brother has just inherited the father's estate. It's not really their own funds from which they're supporting the sister. So the Gemara says, Amar le'tinisua, almana nizonas minichse yisomim, umayse yodesh alahen. So there's a mission later on in the Masechta that talks about a similar concept, but as it relates to an almana. So for example, let's say the man dies and he leaves his wife over, and he also leaves a bunch of kids. So the Mishnah later on says that the almana is entitled to be sustained from the possessions, from the estate that was inherited by the Yisomim. And the Mishnah also adds that any wages that she earns, the Mishnah says that those wages also are going to go to the brothers. So the Gemara says, seemingly that case should be similar to the case of the sister. So the Gemara says, no, they're not similar at all. Midame almanaso lanechale baharvacha, bito nechale baharvacha. The Gemara says that apparently, psychologically, the dead husband or the dead father would prefer that his daughter is well off and is taken care of and sustained more so than his wife that after he dies. So apparently, just because the Mishnah says that the almana gets to hold on to her wages, to her earnings, doesn't necessarily carry over to the case of the daughter. So the Gemara pushes back.
Rabbi, is there an age limit on the support of that daughter by the brothers?
It doesn't seem that way. There is a general discussion about that. Let's say, you know, until what age is a father technically, halachically required to support his children, but that's not really the issue here. Here the issue is that, you know, in other words, the brothers are expected to support the sister with the estate of the father. The only question is, does the sister have to, you know, basically reciprocate and also give any wages or anything that she earns back to the brothers? That's the issue here. Okay, so the Gemara then pushes back. Lememra devito adifa le'almanaso. So clearly our Gemara is assuming that the standing of the daughter, the status of the daughter, is better or is higher than that of the almana. Is that really true? The ha'amar Rabbi Abba, amar Rabbi Yosi, asu almana etzel habas, kivas etzel achin, bin echasin muatin. Ma habas etzel achin, habas nizonas, v'ha'achin yishalu ala psachim, af almana etzel habas, almana nizonas, v'habas yishalu ala psachim. So the Gemara makes reference to a Gemara that appears in Maseches Bava Basra that makes the following distinction. Let's say the father or the husband died and he left a very, very minimal estate, not a lot of money. There wasn't enough money to go around to sustain everyone. There was only enough maybe to support maybe just the daughter, maybe just the almana, but not everybody. So the question is, who gets what's left of the estate and who has to go beg for money? So the Gemara says, well, it depends. If let's say all you had were a bunch of sons and an almana, so the almana is always going to win out. The Gemara also points out that if let's say you had the dead husband left the daughter and also a wife, so then the wife is going to get sustained over the daughter. Then we're going to insist that the daughter go and beg, and the wife is the one who's going to be entitled to to whatever's left of the estate. So doesn't that imply that the almana actually has a higher standing than that of the daughter? So the Gemara says no. Le'inyan zilusa almanasa adifale, le'inyan harvacha bito adifale. There's two different categories here. When it comes to the idea of zilusa, of, you know, degrading yourself to go knock on the door, to go beg for money. So there we're going to insist that the daughter does that before the almana. But when it comes to just the general question of who would the father slash husband rather profit, the assumption is that he would rather have his daughter be well off than his wife after he dies. Okay, then the Gemara says, Masif Rav Yosef, Maisa Yodeha Umitziyasa, Afal Pishala Gavsa, Mesa Av Harehin Shalachin. The Mishnah told us, we already told us a few days ago, that that any wages that the girl earns, or any lost objects that she finds, even though she has yet to collect them, they're not physically in her possession yet, if the father dies, they go to the brothers. In other words, those rights that she would have otherwise gone to the father had he been alive, are going to be bequeathed and given over as a Yerusha to the brother. So the Gemara explains, Taima Devichaye Hav, Haliachar Mises Avliatzma. The only reason why the brothers are entitled to inherit the wages or the lost objects that she finds is only because she was entitled to those things, or she got those things when the father was still alive, implying that had she only, you know, attained her wages or lost objects after the father died, she would get to keep them herself. So the Gemara says, Mailav Benizones, presumably, we're talking about a case where even though she's being supported by the brothers, nonetheless, she gets to hold on to her wages as long as she got them after the father died. So the Gemara says, Lo, Bishayna Nizones. Nope, the only time that she's entitled to hold on to her own wages is only when she's specifically not being supported. Let's say there's not enough money to go around to support the sister. Then she can hold on to her wages. But if she is being supported, then she does in fact have to give the wages over. So the Gemara says, Ibishayna Nizones, Maila Membra. The Gemara says, that's obvious, right? If she's not being supported by the brothers, why on earth would you think that she should have to give up her wages? Even in the case of a father, the halacha is that if the father either isn't or can't support his daughter financially, then of course the daughter is not required to give up her wages to the father. Why on earth would I think that this should be true here by the brothers? So the Gemara explains, no. Afilu leman de'amar yachol harav lomar le'eved aseimi ve'eini zancha hanemili be'eved kenani de'loksiv be'imach aval eved ivri de'ksiv be'imach lo kol shekein bito. The Gemara says like this. One could have argued the following, that there is a concept, there is an opinion quoted in the Gemara regarding an Eved Kanani, what's called Aseimi Ve'eini Zancha, right? We're used to thinking that there's a halacha that, you know, your Eved works for you, your Eved Kanani works for you, so in exchange, you have to give him, you know, basics. You have to give him food, shelter, clothing. However, there is an opinion out there in the Gemara that holds that basically I can make a deal with the Eved Kanani and say, listen, you have to work for me, you're my Eved, and I don't have to support you. There is an opinion like that. How do we know that? So the Gemara says, since the Torah never uses the word imach by an Eved Kanani, because an Eved Kanani is not technically fully Jewish, so perhaps there is an opinion out there that says that I'm not required to support my Eved Kanani, he still has to work for me anyway. However, that does not apply by an Eved Ivri, because the Torah in Parshas Bahar says, ya'avod imach, he has to work with you, and that obviously does not apply by one's daughter. So that option is not on the table when it comes to one's daughter. So, in other words, basically, the only reason why the Gemara had to even mention this halacha, that the girl is allowed to hold on to her wages if she's not being supported, is just to dispel this idea that you shouldn't think that there's a requirement that she has to work, she has to give me her wages, and I'm not required to support her. That concept may be true by an Eved Kanani. Even by an Eved Kanani, it's not agreed upon by all. There's only one Deah that holds of that, but it certainly doesn't apply by an Eved Ivri, and certainly not by one's own daughter or sister in this case. Okay, so then the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Ula, lo nitzricha ela la ha'adafa. So comes the Gemara, comes Rabba with the second answer to this question about what's the Chiddush? Why does the Gemara have to tell me that if the girl is not being supported, she gets to hold on to her wages? Of course she gets to hold on to her wages. What's the chiddush? So the Gemara says, no, the chiddush is, if let's say, for example, her earnings, her wages outpace the amount of money that the brothers or from the father's estate would have been supporting with. Let's say she's a CEO making millions of dollars and the brothers only have, you know, minimal amounts of money. The chiddush is, in that case, she's allowed to hold on to her money. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Gavar Rava, Kerav Yosef, Lo Yada Di'ika Ha'adafa V'Kamosif Tiyufta. The Gemara says, what? Someone as prominent as Rav Yosef, who wasn't aware of this idea that if the girl is making more money than whatever the father's estate can provide, that she's allowed to hold on to the money. That's true even by a regular father. Again, even if the father is alive, if the girl's making more money than what the father can provide, she's allowed to hold on to her wage and say, you know, thank you very much, but I don't need your support. I can take care of myself. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ella Amar Rava, Rav Yosef Masnisin Gufa Kashli. Rav Yosef was bothered by the implication of the Mishnah itself. Dikatane Maisei Yodeha U Mitziyasa, afal pishalo gavsa. So Rav Yosef was bothered really by the second case. Not so much the case about the wages, but rather the case of the girl who finds the lost object. So the Gemara says, Mitziyasa miman gavya. The Mishnah uses this terminology that implies that the girl collected her wages and collected a lost object. But who are you collecting a lost object from? A lost object is something that you stumble upon, that you happen to find in the street. So the Gemara says, you're right. El alav hachi ka'amar, maisei adeha kemitziyasa, ma mitziyasa b'chaye ha'av li'av la'achar misas ha'av Liatzma. The Gemara says that what the Mishnah is trying to highlight is that there's a comparison between the lost object and the wages. Namely, that just as when it comes to finding a lost object, if she finds it when her father's alive, the father gets it. And if it's after the father dies, the girl gets to keep it, not the brothers. The same standards are going to apply when it comes to her wages. If she earns something when the father's alive, the father's entitled to the wages. But if it's after the father dies, then the girl gets to hold on to the wages herself. Rav. And the Gemara says, Itmar Nami, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Basa Nizonas Menachin, Maisei Adel Yatzmo. That's what Rav Yehuda said as well, that if a daughter is being sustained from the brothers, from the dead father's estate, she gets to hold on to her own wages, because again, because at that point, the father is dead. Amar Rav Kahana Maitaima. What's the reason for that? Why is it that she's now allowed to hold on to her wages once her father died? Tichsiv Vihisnachaltem, Osam Livnechem Acharechem, Osam Livnechem, Veloben Osechem Livnechem, Magid Shena the Morish Chuzbito Livno. The Gemara infers this from a pasuk in Parshas Bahar. Parshas Bahar, the Torah is talking about the laws of an Eved Kanani, and it says that, let's say, Reuven, who was the master who owned the Eved Kanani, Reuven dies. There's a concept of Yerusha as it applies to an Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani can be passed along as Yerusha to the sons. However, the Gemara infers from the formulation or the phraseology of the pasuk that says Livnechem Acharichem, that I can pass over in Yerusha my Eved Kanani to my sons. So yes, that you can pass over to your sons, but what you cannot pass over to your sons is Lo Bino Sechem Livnechem. Any rights that your daughter might have accrued, whether it's wages, whether it's lost objects, anything like that, those do not go to the son. That's a special schus that the father is entitled to, but it does not get passed over in Yerusha to the son. So the Gemara pushes back. Maskif Laraba, the Ema Befitui Habasu Knasos Fachavalos Akasim Medaber. The Chintana Rechanina Befitui Habasu Knasos Fachavalos Akasim Medaber. The Gemara says, how do we know that when the Torah limits the rights of the brothers to collect from those types of, you know, financial benefits that would have otherwise gone to the father, that that's talking about, you know, all the things that we've been mentioning here, right? Like, for example, her wages and her lost objects. Maybe it's only referring to very specific categories of financial benefits. Let's say if the girl is seduced, the kanas that she would get for being seduced. Or let's say, for example, if the girl was physically injured, she was beaten up, and now the attacker has to pay her for the bodily harm. Maybe those are the types of damages that are being excluded, that don't go to the brothers. How do I know that all types of financial benefits do not go to the brothers? So the Gemara says no. Chavalos tsar de gufaninu, because the example of bodily harm, when if a person, you know, physically assaults the girl, so then in that case, of course she's entitled to the money, because even if the father were alive, she would be entitled to the money. That idea that a person gets compensated for being physically injured, for physically harmed, so that always goes to the person who was the victim. It never goes to the father, even when the father's alive. So the Gemara pushes back. I'm a Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. The Gemara says, well, that's not entirely true. It depends on the circumstance. Let's say that the attacker, the guy who went ahead and assaulted the girl, you know, disfigured her face. So now she doesn't look as attractive as she did before. That actually will have financial ramifications that will affect the father, because now maybe the father won't be able to marry her off as easily or sell her off as an Amah Ivri as easily. So the father actually is taking a financial hit a little bit if it's a case where her face was disfigured. So the Gemara says, Amar of Zera, Amar of Masna, Amar Rav, Amri Lo, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar of Masna, Amar Rav, Basa Nizonas Menachin, Maisei Odel Atzma, Dichsiv, Vehesnach Altem, Osam Livnechem Acharechem, Osam Livnechem, Beloben Osechem Livnechem, Magid She'ena de Morish Zchuzbito Livno. So again, the Gemara echoes the same idea that we mentioned earlier, which is that the daughter who's being sustained from the brothers, she gets to hold on to her wages anyway, because as we point out from this Pasuk in Parshas Bahar, the Eved Kanani goes over in Yerusha to the sons, but any financial benefit that the girl would get, which would otherwise go to the father had he been alive, do not go to the brothers. The girl gets to hold on to those on her own. So Amar Le Avimi Bar Papi Shukud Amra. So comes Avimi and says, that statement that said that the girl gets to hold on to her wages even if she's being supported by the brothers, that statement was made by Shukud. The Amora's name was Shukud. So the Gemara says, Shukud Manu, who is Shukud? Shmuel. That was a name given to Shmuel. So the Gemara says, but Harav Amra, but Rav was the one who made the statement. So the Gemara says, Ema Af Shukud Amra. Even Shmuel or Shukud also made the statement. Amar Mar Bar Amemar Le Ravashi Hachi Amri Nahar Doi There is a machlokas. How do we paskin about this question? In other words, does the girl get to hold on to her own wages if she's being sustained by the brothers? And the Gemara's conclusion is that we paskin like Rav. We paskin that the girl is in fact entitled to hold on to her wages, right? And even in a case where she's being sustained by the brothers. Okay. Then the Mishnah.
Rabbi, yeah. When we say she's entitled to hold on to her wages, if the brothers support her, let's say $100 a month, she's making 120. Does she have to remit the 100 to the brothers, or she keeps?
No, it sounds like from the Gemara's conclusion that she doesn't have to give them anything. She's entitled to keep the full.
Have to keep anything, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Hama'ari says, Bito v'gersha, Irsa v'nesarmala, Ksuvasa shelo, Hisiya v'gersha, Hisiya v'nesarmala, Ksuvasa shela, Rabbi Yehuda omer harishona shalav, Amrulo, Misha hisiya, in la via rishuspa. Comes the Mishnah with the following. The Mishnah says, let's say, father marries off his daughter in Erison, so she's merely engaged, then she gets divorced from Erison, then the father goes ahead and marries her off again to another man in Erison, and then that other man dies, so now she's widowed. So the Mishnah says, in all these cases, the father is entitled to the ksuba. Why? Because as long as the girl has not yet reached nisuin, she's still considered to be under the domain of the father, and the father, just like he would be entitled to getting her wages or lost objects, is also entitled to the value of the ksuba. However, if let's say the father married her off in nisuin, and then she got divorced, then he married her off in nisuin again, and then she became widowed, then she gets to keep the money of the ksuba. Rabbi Yehuda says that the first time that she was married off, in other words, to the first husband, when the father married off in nisuin before the first husband divorced her, so the father is entitled to keep the value of that original ksuba from the first marriage. And the Chachamim respond and say, no, it's not true. Once the father marries her off in Nisuin, she's considered on her own, she's considered independent, and she gets to keep everything from the ksuba. So the Gemara points out, Taima di hisiya v'gersha hisiya v'nesarmala, aval nesarmala trey zimne tulo chazi le'insuve, v'agav orche kasasim rantana kerebi da'amar betrey zimne havi chazaka. The Gemara just points out kind of a parenthetical idea here, which is a famous machlokas that we actually referenced several times back in Yevamos. It's a famous machlokas between Rebbe and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel about how many times do you need something to happen to establish a chazaka. So Rebbe happens to hold that once an event happens twice, that's already enough to establish a chazaka. And then there's the other opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who says that it has to happen three times. So how does that play out in this Mishnah? So basically, the Mishnah is talking about a scenario where the girl was married off, then she got divorced, married off, and then the husband died. So the Gemara points out that the Mishnah specifically uses a case where first she became a divorcee, and then she became a widow. The Mishnah doesn't give a case where, let's say, she became widowed twice. Let's say the father married her off, the first husband died, and then the second husband died, because if that were true, and this Mishnah was reflecting the opinion of Rebbe, then that girl would not be allowed to get married off again. That's what the Gemara in Yevamos refers to as an Isha Katlanis. Again, that's the Machlokas in Yevamos about how many times do her husbands have to die for her to become considered a quote-unquote murderous woman. Not to say that she literally really killed them, but maybe there's some sort of a bad mazel, bad luck that's causing her husbands to die. So the fact that the Mishnah specifically went out of its way to talk about a case where the first husband divorced her and the second husband died, as opposed to both husbands dying, seems to be reflecting the idea of Rebbe. Fine. Then the Mishnah said, Rebbe Yehuda omer harishona shalav. My time into Rebbe Yehuda. Why does Rebbe Yehuda say that, let's say again, in the case where the father marries her off in Nisuin, then the husband divorces her and marries her off in Nisuin again, then the second husband dies. Why does Rebbe Yehuda say that in the first marriage the father is entitled to the ksuba? So the Gemara explains, Rabbah Rav Yosef Damri Trav. The father already merited the money or the value of the ksuba from the time of Erison. And again, remember, from Erison, the girl is still under the father's domain. So since he already merited the value of the ksuba from the time of Erison, even though now she's already gone through Nisuin, the father is still entitled to the value of the ksuba. So the Gemara pushes back. Masiv Rava, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Harishona Shalav, Umode Rabbi Yehuda Bema'ari says Bito Keshehiktana Uvagra, Viacharka Chnises Shein Lav. So the Gemara questions Rabbi Yehuda based on the following premise. Rabbi Yehuda tells us that, again, as we saw in the Mishnah, that the original ksuba from after the first marriage dissolves goes to the father. However, Rabbi Yehuda concedes that, let's say, the father marries off his daughter in Erison when she's a ketana. So let's say father marries off his 10-year-old daughter in Erison, then she becomes a bogera, so it's already 2.5 years later, she's now 12.5 years old, then she goes through nisuin, so at that point, the father no longer has any rishus over her. She's considered a bogera, she's already gone through nisuin, but the question is, why don't we say that the same way the father should have merited the value of the ksuba from the time of Erison? Since the father married her off to Erison while she was a ketana, so even though now she's a bogeres and now she's gone through nisuin, but the value of the ksuba should still go back to the father. So the Gemara says, you're right. Yeah.
Doesn't every case in a suin, she gets to keep
the ksuba? Well, that's part of machlokas here. Rabbi Yehuda says that's not true. Rabbi Yehuda says that in the case where the father marries her off in Isuin, let's say, and the first husband divorces her, and then he marries her off again, and the second husband dies, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, the father gets to keep the value of the ksuba from the original marriage, and that's the machlokas in the Mishnah. The Chachamim say, no, once you do Isuin, she's on her own. That's it. She's done. But Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. So the Gemara is now questioning that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda himself seems to go against that. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela i'itmar ha'chi'itmar. Rabbi Rabba v'Rav Yosef d'Amri Travayu, hol uvirshuso nichtavin. So comes the Gemara and says that the ksuba was originally written while the girl was still under the domain of the father. So the Gemara then asks, umigva me'imas gavya. So when is she supposed to collect the ksuba? Amar Rav Huna, mana masayim in a'irisin v'sosefes min hanisuin, v'Rav Asi amar echadzev v'echadzev min hanisuin. It's a machlukes between Rav Huna and Rav Asi. According to Rav Huna, there's a distinction depending on which part of the ksuba you're talking about. If you're talking about the base 100 or 200 zuz value of the ksuba, which is the amount that you pay depending if she's a basula or an almana, right, whether it's 100 or 200, so that base amount of the ksuba, that goes back to the time of Erisin. In other words, that obligation that the husband has to pay her the base value of the ksuba, that kicks in already from the time of Erisin. However, any additional amount of money that the husband pledges to give, which is not technically required to do, but that's called tosefes ksuba, any additional amounts that he pledges to give, that only goes into effect on the time of Nisuin, over which the father has no claim. Whereas Rav Asi says that the entire valuation of the ksuba, including the base amount, the 100 or 200, also only goes into effect from the time of Nisuin. So the Gemara then asks, Umi Amar Rav Huna Hachi, did Rav Huna really distinguish and say that the base value of the ksuba goes into effect from the time of Erisin, but the additional value that the husband wants to provide goes in effect at the time of Nisuin? Ve'ha'itmar, hotzia alav shtei ksubos. Achas shel masayim be'achas shel shlosh meos. So imagine the following case. The girl has two ksubos. One ksuba says that the husband owes her 200, and the other one says that the husband owes her 300. Va'amar Rav Huna, baso ligvos masayim govem mizman rishon, shlosh meos govem mizman sheni. So comes Rav Huna makes the following distinction. He says, if the girl wants to collect the 200 zuz ksuba, so then she can collect back from the original time of Erisin, but if she wants to use the 300 zuz ksuba, then she's going to be limited to only collecting from the second time of Nisuin. V'im isa tigve masayim mizman rishon u'meya mizman sheni. If what we're saying is true, that Rav Huna distinguishes between the base value of the ksuba versus the additional tosefes that's added on, so then the Gemara should have said that the 200 zuz is collectible from the original time of Erisin, whereas that additional 100 zuz that the husband pledges in the second ksuba is only collectible from the time of Nisuin. Now, you might be wondering, why would a girl ever opt to collect the lower valuation ksuba, not the higher one? So this gets into a very complicated discussion that Rashi and other Rishonim reference of regarding a case of what's called lekuchos. Let's say, for example, the girl had some debt that she had to pay to her creditors. So the halacha is that a creditor is allowed to seize certain land, even if you sold off that land, in certain scenarios. So basically, any land that has a shiba, that has a lien on it, so the creditors can come and seize the land and say, I need this land back to pay up the debt that this girl owes me. So basically, there may be circumstances where it's actually beneficial for her to go after the lower valuation ksuba, because it's basically going to prevent the lekuchos from collecting certain things. If she goes after the higher valuation, then there may be more money on the table for the creditors to collect. So the Gemara pushes back. The Gemara says, but again, by that logic, we should be allowed to collect the entire valuation, the entire 500 zuz of the ksuba, right? We should just make the following distinction. 200, the base value of the ksuba, should be collectible from the original time of Erisin, and then the additional 300 that the husband tacked on for Tosefes ksuba should be collectible from the time of Nisuin. So the Gemara says, Elacha, why is it that the entire 500 zuz valuation is not collectible? Because the husband did not write the following in the ksuba. He didn't say, you know, I'm agreeing to add on 300 zuz to the original 200. The husband basically says the following. Listen, if you want to collect from the original time of the ksuba, from the time of Erisin, and you want to, you know, override any potential creditors that may come in to try and seize the land, then you're only entitled to the 200, to the base value of the ksuba. However, if you're going to come in and claim that you want the 300 valuation ksuba, then you're only going to be allowed to collect for the time of Nisuin, and if there were any creditors, you know, that came in the interim, they're going to have precedence to be able to take value of the land. So the Gemara says, Hacha nami hainu taima de la gavya, mi de la kasav la, osifis lecha mea amasayim, achule achilte l'shia buda kama. So the same is true here as well. Since the husband does not write in the ksuba, he says, you know, I'm adding on 100 to the base value of the ksuba of 200. So essentially, he's being mochel that original shibud. He's saying that any lien that was on that was on property based on the original ksuba is now being forgiven. So in other words, according to this answer in the Gemara, only the second ksuba is the one that actually matters, because the husband effectively is being mochel. I'm sorry. The girl is effectively being mochel the valuation of the original ksuba, and therefore she's basically stuck collecting whatever is in the valuation of the second ksuba.